Yes. Airy man opens first beer. So the sound of this means that this is Connor Orr, staff writer with Sports Illustrated. I'm here with fellow staff writer Jonathan Jones for hopefully the first of many episodes of Bad Football Movies. We just popped the tap on a, how do you pronounce this?
Hublon Chauffet.
Hublon Chauffet Triple Ale. And on the five-year anniversary of the football classic Draft Day, starring Kevin Costner, like Dennis Leary is in this. I'm trying to think of, this is like an all-star cast.
Yeah, but it's Kevin Costner, and that's what matters.
And meant to capture all the emotion and excitement of Draft Day. I've seen it three times and in two languages.
Really?
Yeah. Woke up one morning unable to sort of get off the couch, and it was on HBO, the Spanish HBO.
Sure.
And so I just wrote it out, and it was almost as good as it was in English.
Wow. So that says something. So I have actually never seen this movie.
Excited.
I've been out on all of the jokes like that I've seen on Twitter. I understand it's about, you know, this fictitious Browns team, and they have the top pick, right? And like it's like everything that's going to happen in this draft.
Correct.
But that's, and I know that there are a few fellow NFL scribes and insiders who are in the movie, and that is literally all that I know about the movie.
This is, it's going to be fun for me, too, to just watch you watch this for the first time. So I think what our plan is going to be is to, we're going to hit pause on it just for, start on it for a little ambient noise for you guys to get into this. All the epic preamble, the all the production companies and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I guess you did a pretty good job setting the stage for the movie, I would say.
I don't know anything about it. I just know that it's like taking people inside the draft, quote unquote, war room.
Yeah.
They always call it a war room. Like, what war is happening in this room?
Certainly in this. I would say that the draft room scenes at the end of this movie are more intense than war room scenes that I've seen in war movies.
Oh, wow.
So what does that say? What does that say for...
Was it more intense in English or Spanish? I can't wait for how bad this movie's about to be.
All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to check in about every 20, 25 minutes here and... Just get some of Jonathan's thoughts here, and just for those of you who don't know, I mean, Jonathan is a legit film buff here. I mean, I would consider you probably, outside of Jenny Vrentas, probably our biggest film buff.
I do like films. I have been known to like end or not go on second dates with girls when they have never seen Pulp Fiction.
Wow. What about would Dre? After this, I wonder if Draft Day will enter that canon similarly.
It will speak to me in some way.
All right, so we're going to leave you guys with the beginning of Draft Day, Chris Berman's voice booming over different shots of the NFL draft setting up here. And so, yeah, we'll check back in a little bit. All right, Jonathan, we are 16 minutes into Draft Day. We've learned a whole lot about these characters here. Kevin Costner is Sonny Weaver Jr., is the GM of the Browns, who also, I think we could start here, impregnated the team salary cap manager, who is Jennifer Gardner, which is like a horrible representation of a
women,
female,
yeah,
in the NFL.
Awful.
And like, so we
and they're not together, right?
They're not dating.
Yeah, right.
So clearly this was like consummated over like some late night salary cap,
right,
meetings or something like that. what sticks out to me, the awful dialogue.
That's chief among everything.
Yeah, the Seahawks general manager awakes at 4:15 a.m. to a full pancake breakfast. And then basically is trying to find the dumbest GM in the draft, which turns out to be Kevin Costner. What were your main takeaways here from the beginning of this?
So I have a lot of takeaways, and I want our listeners to know that like I'm also like taking notes whenever I just find something absolutely ridiculous. And so the first thing in this movie that I found to be ridiculous is that the owner of the Seattle Seahawks is black. like there are no black NFL owners. I think we're like 20 years away from that ever happening. So that was the most amazing thing to me, like as a black man, just so that our listeners know. I love Deion Sanders being like, yeah, you know, he got into a little skirmish, got charged with assault and battery. I love that Chadwick Boseman is playing like this hood dude who has to like get out to like make
Vontae
money.
Vontae Mack.
Yeah, like, and like Chadwick Boseman is an A++ like movie star, right? And like he's playing one, this, you know, 20 to 21 year old college football player. But then also a dude just kind of talks like this, you know, got to take care of my nephews. They in the back with me, you know, it's just, oh, and then the other thing, Kevin Costner is on the phone pumping gas. You should never do that. And finally, right when we paused it, I don't know if you noticed this, but the clock in his truck read 9:30. And there is not a GM in the NFL around the draft who he has yet to go into the office yet. It's 9:30 a.m. and he has not been into the office yet. Meanwhile, the Seahawks general manager literally sleeps in his office, but the Cleveland general manager isn't there yet.
Some things that, just in case you haven't seen Draft Day, although I don't know why you'd be listening to this if you haven't at least seen Draft Day, is that, so they're essentially like setting the stage for like the players that the Browns might draft. Vontae Mack being Chadwick Boseman, a running back played by Arian Foster,
right.
like a almost pre-retirement 35-year-old Arian Foster playing like a 21, 22-year-old running back who's accused of assault and battery in college.
A little skirmish
that left somebody in the hospital. And then both of these players, Chadwick Boseman and Arian Foster, call Kevin Costner, the general manager of the Browns, to make their pitch before the draft. It just doesn't get any better than that.
It really doesn't. So I'm excited to see where this goes. I can imagine, of course, that Cleveland, desperate enough, there's pressure from the owner of the Cleveland Browns,
yes,
on the GM to make this trade. He's going to have to sell the farm in order to move up from 7-1, but obviously he's about to do it. And so I think here's where we just kind of start up again.
Yeah, but just to mention, the line of the movie so far.
Yeah.
We just passed it. So, again, the owner of the Browns, and this is a fictitious water park mogul. just to say that, it's like,
right,
completely outrageous. And he takes Sonny to the water park.
They don't meet at the team offices.
No. They take this barren Cleveland area water park in April. Yeah, so there should be some people there.
It's Cleveland.
To create this splash metaphor where you need to make a splash, and splashes, and you know, or what we do in the draft. And then before the cut scene, it's, remember, Sonny, people pay to get wet. And then hard cut. And now we are back in the Seahawks office where presumably they're going to try to convince the general manager of the Browns to trade for the number one pick. We'll see what happens. All right, so we're now about 45 minutes into the movie. I would say that having seen it a few times, this is probably one of the slower parts of the movie, in that it's sort of like those scenes in movies where like the people in like horror movies, like one person's in this door and one person's in this door. We're essentially like following the GM of the Browns as he tries to make amends with the salary cap manager that he impregnated.
Right. He also just pulled her into like a broom closet, and this is supposed to be like some secret relationship, but on the day of the draft in the team offices, he like pulls this woman with whom he's having an undercover relationship with into this like broom closet to chat. There's a lot of ridiculous things. I mean, that's going to keep happening. What was your favorite line in that?
Oh.
Jennifer Gardner delivered it.
I'm a Cleveland girl. I am football.
Ah, so good. It's so good. Like, I just, I don't want this podcast to just be like everything that I found ridiculous about the last, you know, 25 minutes that we watched. But early on, like, first of all, shout out to Jonah Ryan, the Veep character played by Timothy Simons, who's in this. I presume he's a scout. He's dressed like a scout. Adam Schefter of ESPN he wants info from Sonny, the GM of the Browns. So he doesn't text Sonny. He doesn't, you know, call him on his cell phone. He calls the office line, and he gets an intern. And, like, I can imagine Schefter, like, dialing, like, 216-522-1000. And, like, yeah, can I speak to Sonny?
Adam Googles Cleveland Browns headquarters and then dials the number on Wikipedia to try to talk to the head coach of the Browns.
That is amazing. The other amazing thing is that Bo Callahan, the presumed number one pick, and we're starting to see this conflict happen, right?
Right.
They're building it up very nicely to where, hey, this is the fantastic prospect, can't miss on him, nobody has anything bad to say about him. But Kevin Costner's character, there's something about this.
Right.
And he understands it. And then he sees how great of a guy the linebacker out of Ohio State, Chadwick Boseman's character,
Vontae Mack,
what a great name. It's starting to kind of come together. You're seeing the conflict. But my favorite part, other than P. Diddy being Bo Callahan's agent, incredible, right?
Just, I'm not spoiling anything here. They're actual agents, like actual people who represent football players that are in this movie later on. And yet when it came for the most important character, they're like, we need to nail the realism of this, of the main agent. Sean Combs.
And listen, there's Roc Nation.
True.
Right?
That's true.
Little bit of sense. But, you know, Sonny calls P. Diddy. He's like, hey, put me on the phone with Bo Callahan. And they're talking, and this is the first time they've ever talked. And Bo Callahan's like, I can't wait to meet you, sir. And it's like, how have you not done your homework? How have you not had this guy in on a top 30 visit?
No pre-draft visit. No Senior Bowl, no college workout, like no on-campus workout. They just decided literally 15 minutes ago to trade your next 3 years of first-round picks, and you did zero homework on this guy.
And so now that this has happened, the current quarterback who's been there for 8 seasons is really upset once he hears about it. And he goes into Sonny's office and trashes the place. And I mean, that's incredible. And so they meet and they have this dramatic locker room scene where the quarterback lets him know, you know, Sonny, I've been busting my ass and I'm the guy and I can make this offense work. And you can kind of see the wheels turning a little bit in Sonny's head. He's like, oh man, he might be right. Because he just got some information, right, Connor, that like he's benching 400, he's bench pressing 250 pounds 25 times. I looked this up. Only two quarterbacks. So the bench press at the combine, it's what?
225.
It's 225. Yeah. Only two quarterbacks in the last 13 years have even gotten 25 on 225. That was the great Jason Boltus and Rhett Bomar.
Rhett Bomar.
You may remember. I mean, the only name that like I even remember in like the top 10.
Brady Quinn?
Brady Quinn put up 24.
Another Browns quarterback.
Yeah, but like I'm looking at this, like Reggie Ball is tied for ninth with 15.
Reggie Ball.
Man, great, great quarterback.
Yeah.
Even though he threw it out of bounds on fourth down on the last play against Georgia. It was a terrible, terrible play. That's what I always remember about Reggie Ball.
Reggie Ball. He had a cup of coffee in the NFL.
Yeah, it was a cup of coffee.
So I think that, like you said, it's – you can't harp on, like, I don't know if anyone would. It's like when they brought in, what was his name from West Wing? Aaron Sorkin to fix Moneyball, right?
Right.
Like, there needed to be, like, an element of this that moved along. I don't think that the casual fan would probably digest, like, what was going on in a war room. I don't know if they would
right,
get into that.
Right.
That being said, like, you know, we were talking about, like, how ridiculous, like, the premise of all of this is. But then I sort of had this thought that, you know, if you go back and you read both the story that Albert – all right, yeah, I'm out of beer here.
Yeah, we're popping open a Stella. So.
Yeah, the story that both Albert Breer and Robert Klemko wrote for us and then that Seth Wickersham also wrote for ESPN, where it sort of detailed the ridiculousness of the end of the Hugh Jackson era. Like – some of this stuff does not seem far off.
No, it doesn't.
Like, you know, there was nobody pulling anybody into a broom closet, but the scene that we were watching in particular that jogged my memory there was that in draft day, Dennis Leary, the head coach of the Browns, gets so upset that he thinks they're not drafting their running back, Ray Jennings, that he goes into the general manager's office and he takes out a Zippo and he lights the scouting report on fire and then throws it onto a desk full of other paper. There's a lot of other paper on this desk that could have just caught flames. And that's what jogged my mind. I was like, you know what? Some of the stuff that we've heard about the Browns is not that far. It's not that far off.
Right, and this was the pre-trashed office that he came up and did that. And then, of course, Jennifer Gardner's character, who, you know, is this female capologist who has been impregnated by the general manager of the team.
Still a detail that I'm having a hard time getting over.
Right? She apparently is also the office manager.
Bad look for the Browns. Bad look for the movie.
Terrible. I'm willing to cancel this movie. Is that, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, there's a fire. And then she just walks in with a fire extinguisher.
like nobody else knows who the fire extinguisher is except for Jennifer Gardner.
That's right. I'm excited to see what comes next. I'm loving this.
So, yeah, I mean, presumably over the next, we got about an hour left here. Presumably over the next hour, we're going to find out what's wrong with Bo Callahan, what Sonny Weaver actually does on draft day, what happens when they're on the clock, and whether or not he's going to be a willing father in this baby's life.
Yeah, so these are three pretty big conflicts that I'm looking forward as we get to the rising action or continue through the rising action, how this plays out.
All right, let's get back to draft day. I think that this movie suffers a lot from, just so everybody can catch up with us, we're about an hour and 2 minutes in this hour and 50-minute epic, some of the weirdest conversational structures. Like, nobody would talk to anybody like this in real life, which, in a way, makes me think that it's a fairly accurate portrayal of the way that an NFL office works. But so, we just this is where the movie really starts to unfold. So the Browns have the number one pick in the draft, which is presumably Wisconsin quarterback Bo Callahan. But then the fact-finding process begins. They find out that none of Bo Callahan's friends attended his 21st birthday. Or none of his teammates. None of his teammates attended his 21st birthday. And then they incorporated the age-old scouting trick, which we've heard before, actually. So they incorporated a little like NFL truism in here, which is that some teams would tape something to the back of the playbook to prove that the players had read the playbook. Bo Callahan lied about reading the playbook.
That was number one.
And then lied about knowing about the $100 bill that was taped at the end of the playbook. So this is two major knocks on Bo Callahan's character right here.
Yeah, you know, Bo is, it's clear at this point that there's something about Bo. And I don't know if it's enough that his teammates didn't want to be with him at his birthday party. I don't know if it is enough that, okay, he doubled down on an obvious lie. Or, you know, the earlier deal with Bo, what was it with Bo earlier?
He couldn't handle the sacks.
Vontae Mack is all over him, right? Mm-hmm. And that he you know, was flustered under pressure. He succeeds against Wisconsin or against Ohio State only when Vontae Mack is out. And then we are also seeing that Vontae Mack got ejected from the game for giving a football after his strip sack, scoop and score to his now deceased sister. And so we are definitely understanding that Chadwick Boseman, you know, this kid from the hood, is a really, really solid character guy with an incredibly high motor. But meanwhile, Bo Callahan, man, there's just something about this kid. You can't put your finger on it, but there's nothing particularly likable about him. It almost sort of sounds like, you can't put your finger on it, but it almost sounds like a guy who's currently being discussed as the number one overall selection.
I was going to say, like, if you bring this, if you spin this into, like, current times, like, you know, and you imagine, like, the kind of dynamics that are at play every year when we digest the draft and all the draft discussion, it's like, Bo Callahan would have skated through. He would have been, no question, been the number one pick.
No, like, problem at
if
all.
The biggest knock on him is that other people don't like him, then that's totally, like, if you're a certain kind of person, that's totally, totally acceptable for
the number one overall pick. I do love, like, the fact that the Browns just have done zero recon. As a number seven overall pick, beforehand, that they have not at all looked into the clear number one guy, and that the GM just decided, nope, let's make this deal, even though we know nothing about him, but I'm going to get my guys and probably my former FBI agent who's now on staff as this team enforcement guy, team security.
Team security.
Right. Isn't that always interesting? They always get like these former FBI guys or like these top law dogs, and then they can't figure out something about a coach or a player that you could find on Nexus.
I think what we're all trying to say is hire more journalists, guys.
That's right.
God, you know.
Yeah, just don't take them from Sports Illustrated. Like, we miss Lee Jenkins. Love you, Lee.
I think that one of my favorite, most underrated parts of this is that, you know, it's so insidery, right? And so, like, it's a movie for people who love the NFL draft. And so you're trying to broaden the horizon. And so they have to bake this stuff into normal conversation. So if the strength coach is talking to the GM, he's like, do you have any idea what your star quarterback, Brian Drew, has been benching? It's like, do you think that the strength coach would ever, to like Tom Coughlin, be like, do you have any idea what your star quarterback Eli Manning has been doing?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, I know who he is. You know, it's Eli. Yeah,
you know, they've been working out in private because they can't be in here during voluntary workouts throwing footballs during phase one of organized team activities.
They should just have like a scrolling reading of the CBA that's going on like subsequently to the movie.
The capologist knew like every single play from the fantastic like Joe Montana 49ers drive to beat the Bengals in the Super Bowl. That was a really touching moment.
Mm-hmm. I think that like honestly, my first two watches of this movie were like they should have just made Jennifer Garner the GM and just eliminated like
right, like, which honestly would have been more believable than making a black man an owner in the NFL.
The Browns almost did hire Condoleezza Rice, right? So, as head coach.
I love that that had legs for like 30 minutes. That was one of my favorite NFL Sunday mornings.
It's good times.
Do you remember where you were when that happened? I was in Atlanta.
Writing. I had to write that.
Okay. Yeah. I was in Atlanta. I was preparing for the Falcons-Cowboys game. It was like, I think it was the game before Thanksgiving, perhaps. Like, it was that week. And, like, I've never heard a press box be so loud, like, while it was supposed to be working.
Yeah.
You know? But everyone couldn't stop, like, laughing. Not at the Condoleezza Rice news, but it was the subsequent news that, like, it just got totally debunked 30 minutes later.
I mean, I think she would, I honestly would hire her to be the president of my team.
Absolutely.
100%.
Sure.
So that's why, like, when I first heard it, I was like, I don't know. But we're getting a little deep in the weeds here.
Back to draft day.
Back to draft day. Jennifer Garner, you should have been the head coach, the GM. You know, you should have had the Belichick combo deal. She clearly knows more about football than anybody else in this
movie.
That's
right.
So
very obvious.
Let's see what let's see what happens next. Jonathan, the Browns are on the clock. We've just gotten to the point in the movie where Commissioner Goodell comes out. maybe a little bit of creative editing there. No booze, as is customary for the NFL draft. He comes out to Radio City to a standing ovation here.
A lot of cheers.
A lot of cheers for the old commish. So 9:59 left on the clock. This is going to be a quick update. Who do you think the Browns are going to pick? You haven't seen this movie.
I have not seen this movie. I mean, in my years of watching movies and, you know, creating stories and whatnot and reading fiction, I would have to believe that there's no way that they take Bo Callahan with the number one overall pick.
Okay.
In fact, I think that they're going to end up taking Vontae Mack, which is going to, like, drive me up the wall that they that they just traded up and traded away their future to get a guy that they could have easily gotten at 7.
Right.
But that is the way it seems to be moving. That's just I think the running back's out of it. You know, whoever Arian Foster is playing, like, he just hasn't played a big enough role. He hasn't been calling Sonny Weaver Jr. enough on his phone. So, yeah, I believe there's no chance to take Bo Callahan. I'm 100% on that. But I am like 70% that they end up taking Vontae Mack.
All right, the Browns are on the clock. Again, 9:59 left. Who will be the future of Sonny Weaver's Browns? We're about to find out.
They're going to take Bo Callahan and do some bullshit.
NFL draft. The Cleveland Browns select Vontae Max.
Oh, let's go! Yes!
Let's go!
Oh, man. Jonathan, you were dead on. The Browns selected Vontae Max. First overall, the owner has spiked his Bo Callahan jersey.
Frank Langella is so mad.
Brian Drew, the Browns quarterback, is celebrating. Bo Callahan, who has lied to everybody through this, is super upset. Everyone in the draft room is freaking out right now at Kevin Costner, who is just coolly ignoring everybody.
I mean, they should be freaking out because because they could have gotten the same guy at 7. Like, I understand, okay, hey, let's elevate him because he's a great guy, high character, high motor guy. He deserves to be the number one overall pick. That's not how you build a team, folks.
This is, I hope, they certainly didn't consult, like, who built the draft chart, the draft trade value
Jimmy
chart?
Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah, they certainly didn't consult Jimmy Johnson for this. Okay, so that was just... We quickly popped in here just to let all of you know. I know you were waiting patiently. So Vontae Max has gone number one. The Browns now have 0 first-round picks.
For like the next 2.5 years.
For the next 2.5 years. This is crazy. Like, this is the Browns. This came out in 2014. So the Browns will not theoretically have a pick until Donald Trump is president.
Wait, is this an alternate universe? If this is an alternate Browns universe, can this be also an alternate American
Browns,
universe?
The Browns didn't have a pick until Al Gore is president. And so, anyway, we're back to Chris Berman and Mel Kiper and John Gruden.
John Gruden is on
here. Who are analyzing the pick here, so we're going to check back in, because my guess is that the Browns are not done, because there's still about...
There's still a lot of time left.
There's still
left
half an hour
movie,
left
so
in the movie.
So something has to happen.
Okay, so...
This is incredible.
So, the Browns have drafted Vontae Max. The general,
I called it.
You called it. You called it. So, the general manager then misses the next 3 picks.
He's in his girlfriend's office.
He missed the next 3 picks to talk to his girlfriend, and then re-enters the draft room where all of his employees are still sitting there, and they're saying, okay, Bo Callahan has still not been taken. And then he asked 2 questions, which were a little bothersome to me. The first of which is, who's picking at number 4? You probably know that.
I mean, even like a novice NFL fan at this point in the season, and certainly on draft day, not a novice, but like, you know, they're taking NFL 301. They know who the number 4 pick in the draft is.
The number 4 pick in the draft is, yeah. So just a quick update. So they're now... transitioning to like this very cool sort of like the end of the Law and Order intro music plays.
Right. Yeah. It's very like late 80s movie. Like you can see this being played, this music being played in like the hour 30 mark of Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yes. And so if you haven't seen the movie, so the Browns had taken that first round pick from the Seahawks. The Seahawks are at 7 where the Browns were before. And then all of a sudden, Sonny Weaver says, well, who's picking number 6? And then they said, oh, it's that kid GM from Jacksonville. Cool 80s music plays. And we'll get back to the action.
Now we're in Duval County.
This might be... I'm glad to see that you're pulling out the draft value chart.
Right.
So the twist in the movie now is that the Browns have somehow, even though they've traded 3 of their future first-round picks for the number 1 pick, they've somehow managed to, with 0 draft capital, get back to the number 6 pick to jump the Seahawks, who had number 7. Does this check out at all on the draft value chart?
Or? No, the first pick did not check out, because what they should have done was, like, what the Jets did. It's more similar to what the Jets did last year with the Colts, where they went from 6 to 3, where, okay, we're going to switch first-round picks, right? So you're going to go down 3 if you're the Colts, but then you're also going to get this year's it ended up being 3 second-round picks.
Right.
It was ultimately what it was to go up 3 spots. What the Browns have given up, they've given up 3 first-rounders, for six spots. Now they've given up 3 second-rounders to get the number 6 overall pick, where, again, theoretically, they could have stayed at 7, taken Vontae Mack, and still gotten their number 1 overall pick. And, okay, you don't have your – I assume – I'm only assuming here that they're going after – see, hold on. I just caught myself in the middle of all this. They're not going after Bo Callahan. They're getting the running back.
Oh, no. Okay, so.
I just caught, because it makes you think, like, okay, they want to get in front of Seattle because Seattle obviously wants Bo Callahan. They thought they'd get him later. Oh, my gosh, this GM would look like a genius. No. Don't forget about who Arian Foster is playing with. Is that Terry Crews as his agent?
Terry Crews is his dad.
Is his dad. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, the former Browns, or yeah, the Browns player. And so yeah. Now that's what they're doing. They're getting their guy at linebacker that they could have had at 7. They're getting him at 1. And, oh, the double dip. And I don't know when this podcast is running, but I'm just going to say this right here and now. I think the Raiders should absolutely do something like this, where they draft at 4, and they package 24 and 27, and then they move back up into the top 10, get 2 blue chippers, and you know what? Devil may care. Go do it. I love this.
John Gruden and Mike Mayock are both in this movie as an analyst, by the way. So the fact that they have this as a frame of reference... My God. Okay, but there is one big twist left that you haven't seen yet.
There's another twist?
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. Okay, so now the Browns are ahead of the they've jumped ahead of the Seahawks for the price of 3 second-round picks for the number 6, which does not check out on the draft value chart. And okay, here we go. Say it with me. You get Bo Callahan.
Deal. Great. You're welcome. From the
trade. All right. So, we're out of breath right now.
Oh, this my is gosh. Like, say it with me.
So, the Browns have come full circle. They've leaped in front of the Seahawks. They've gotten all of their picks back. And then Kevin Costner, at the last minute, throws up the number 1 in the air. He puts mute on the phone while he's in trade discussions with the Seahawks, and he says, hold on, hold on. And then he asks his entire war room, what do we need? And someone in the distance goes, offense? And then the salary cap manager, who again, Jennifer Garner, is the only person who seems to understand how this football team works, says, we need a punt returner. Get David Putney. And so then Kevin Costner says, I want all my picks back, and I want David goddamn Putney because I feel like it.
And on the other line, the CEO's like, oh, I don't know if we can let go of this guy who's ostensibly a 6th-round pick.
Just our punt returner.
Yeah. I mean, you're basically like letting go of Ryan Switzer.
I want all my first 3-round picks back, and I want Devin Hester.
It's actually Ryan Switzer. That's who it is. No, my gosh. Okay, so the trade value chart has been thrown out the window here.
It's been run over by several garbage trucks. It's like, it's gone. It's out, yeah.
And so what does not make sense is, if the Seahawks absolutely wanted Bo Callahan, they would have stayed at number 1, because there's no chance that Bo Callahan is going to fall to them wherever they trade out of, right? Like, okay, you want Bo Callahan. Okay, no. You know what? I'm going to wake up on the day of draft, and I'm going to trade back to number 7 and hope we get Bo Callahan. And then as he's falling to us, like, oh, look at that trade. No, that's not what happens. And so I see, obviously, so now they're going to make the trade, and they're going to get all their picks back, and they're going to get Ray Jennings, played by Arian Foster. Everybody's going to feel good about it. I got it. You know, we can watch the end of it. It's not going to matter. It's going to be sappy. It's probably going to be something about Cleveland. I honestly don't care.
We can't say this because it's I don't know what the beeping process looks like here, but I think that the movie ends up being punctuated by, you know, at the beginning of the movie, when the first trade is consummated, when Cleveland loses all their picks, the Seattle Seahawks GM lets him know that he's eating pancakes. And then now here we are, an hour and 40 minutes into the movie, and Kevin Costner calls the general manager of the Seahawks a pancake-eating mother effer. Like, to punctuate this, I don't know.
It's supposed to be poetic. I don't know what to make of this.
All right, so we're just going to finish. So the Stella was good, and this French IPA was also very good.
This was also a very good IPA. Great.
All right, so we're just going to finish this movie out. Okay, here we go. One more. No. We're wrapping it up.
I don't know anything about this movie.
So we've added somebody, our executive MMQB editor, Mark Mravick, to sort of put a bow on this. Mark's seen about the last 4 minutes of the movie, which essentially he's seen the entire movie. Jonathan, what are your closing thoughts on this?
It's an absurd movie. I mean, like, I've spent so much time, and like, Mark understands, obviously, Connor, you understand this, like, you know, we put out a lot of draft content, like some really good draft content. And a lot of times we'll do some like, hey, here's a potential. Here's something that I've kind of worked up in my mind. Here's what I can see happening. And so I spent a lot of time with trade value charts. And none of this makes any sense whatsoever. I don't get how you trade all your firsts, and then why Seattle would be willing, if the quarterback of the future, if you actually believe Bo Callahan is your guy, it would absolutely be like the Cardinals thinking, because a lot of people are saying this right now, right, Mark and Connor? If the Cardinals don't take Kyler Murray at number one, he could fall out of the top 10. And so it would be like the Cardinals saying, you know what? I'm going to try that.
take Kyler Murray. Yeah.
And so I'm going to get all these picks, and then I'm just going to like trade back up with, I don't know, the Lions at 8, and just, I'll try to get to Kyler Murray there. That's what it would be like.
Jonathan, it's the magic of the movies. You have to suspend disbelief here.
I can't.
I don't know if this movie is magic, but you just have to buy the whole concept.
I ran out of disbelief when Jennifer Garner's ex-husband was Batman.
Was he really? I didn't see any of this movie. Was he really Batman, or was he the guy who played Batman?
Yeah, right.
Oh man.
Connor, what are your thoughts after seeing this movie now for a fourth time?
What have I done with my life? Mm. This is
8 hours.
4 times 2. Yeah, it's 8 hours that I'm never going to get back. So that's a difficult pill to swallow. I will say that it is significantly worse than I remember it the first time. Like the first time when I came out in 2014, I was like, all right, you know. And then now I'm like, oh my God, like this is so bad. It's so bad. You know, like we could go down the list. Like, so the GM of the Browns on draft day misses 4 picks. Just is not in the war room for 4 picks.
Right.
Wait, where was he?
He was talking to his girlfriend in his office. He doesn't know the name of the Jaguars GM.
Yeah.
Like, theoretically, like, you're all taking pictures of the owners' meetings together. You should know who general manager the
Jaguars
is.
He doesn't know who's picking fourth in the draft.
He didn't know who's picking fourth. 3 picks behind them.
Right.
Or 3 picks in front of them if they kept the original pick.
He hadn't done any scouting work on the top prospect in the draft.
So is he a drunk in this movie, or what's his deal?
I haven't seen him take a sip. He's as sober as a goat.
Which is more than you can say about us.
I like coming in the last 6 minutes of a movie. I'm trying to figure it out based on what you guys are saying.
Well, I think that was a giant success thanks to the district in 225 Liberty for the beer. Thanks to, how do we pronounce it again?
Oh, I don't know.
Houblon Chouf for the phenomenal, what is that, an IPA triple?
It's a triple L.
Woo!
Yeah.
I think we needed the 9%ers to get through this, boys.
We did.
I'm not going to lie. We laughed, we cried, and we learned a little bit about the draft. So
no, you didn't.
No, you learned nothing about the draft. You learned what the draft isn't. It's not Kevin Costner and Jennifer Garner and Ellen Burstyn and Frank Langella and Roger Goodell. Well, it is Roger Goodell.
Yeah, it is. It is still Roger Goodell.
I guess the only way to leave this is people with this is the line.
Arian Foster wasn't even drafted. He finally gets to be drafted.
That's why he's
good for him. All right. Yeah.
How do we leave this, Connor?
The only way that we leave this is obviously the moral of the story, which Frank Langella's character said earlier on in the movie at his abandoned water park when he told the general manager, "Sonny, people like to get wet." So that's what we learned from this. Thank you guys for listening to Bad Football Movies. Hopefully we won't all be fired and we can do this again.